You there, adventurer? Yes, you. Do you desire knowledge of immense worlds and arcane power? A codex of untold stories and lore? Or perhaps simply easy listening for your daily commute? Then feast your eyes, or more accurately, ears, upon Dungeonpedia. Shit's about to get nerdy in here.
Hello everyone, and welcome to Dungeonpedia, an exploration into the lore of Dungeons & Dragons. We're your hosts, Lewin Markell,
Taylor Stanfield,
and I'm Travis Beasley.
And I just want to apologize to you, the listener, for, maybe the next, two or three weeks, because I'm sick. So I'm going to sound like shit. And also, this is my episode today, so I'm going to, sound like extra shit while I dictate things to you.
Yeah, you picked a great time to get sick. It couldn't be over maybe a week or 2 week period where Travis and I were doing something.
Mm-mm.
Right. And I just wanted to also be noted that before we started recording, she was like, no, I can totally fake it. We can all tell that you're sick. We get it. Sickness happens. It's the winter.
Well, I have my nice...
Close to.
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically winter.
Like, even if it's not winter, it's winter.
The second it hits 32 degrees
it's winter.
Outside, it's winter.
It's been winter here forever.
But I've got my nice little cup of tea, just chilling. And I'm going to get through this. And I might make Travis run to the store and get me some more broth.
I need to get some other things for... tomorrow anyway, so.
I always need to go to the store.
And that's just adulthood. But
it is.
Anyway, sickness aside, for this week's episode, it was suggested by Willem Elkhart. Thank you. And he wanted us to do an episode on Modrons. And technically, that is what this episode is. But I also kind of wanted to turn this into my first, deep dive into a single plane, although... I guess technically most of our regular episodes are a deep dive into the prime material plane, but regardless.
That's an interesting way to think about it. I never thought about that.
I didn't either, but now I'm having a conundrum.
This week, I'm going to talk in depth about the lawful neutral plane, Mechanus, and its most well-known inhabitants, the Modrons.
Okay, yeah, because, you said those words... And they meant nothing to me. I was like, what the fuck is that?
Well, as you'll recall, I discussed Mechanus very, very briefly during our planes episode. It's one of the outer planes.
Yeah it was touched on just a skip and then done.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was touched on briefly. And it's the lawful neutral one?
Yes.
So that means I wasn't really listening.
It was also pretty close to the end of it. And I was rushing through just to finish up on time. But anyways... Mechanus was first conceived of in July 1977 in Dragon Magazine number 8, Planes, the Concepts of Spatial, Temporal, and Physical Relationships in D&D.
Dang. Jesus, that
That's
is
heavy.
The title.
That's heavy.
It was the same article where Gary Gygax introduced the concept of a planar system to Dungeons & Dragons.
Nice.
Back then, it was called Nirvana, the Ultimate Plane of Law. It was straight up ripped from Hinduism.
I feel Nirvana, and for me, Nirvana just...
I think of, bliss.
Evokes a very different mental image for me.
Than lawful...
Not just a gigantic, high school, entirely by hall monitors. That's not what I... No, I'm kidding. That's lawful good. Sorry.
So the name Nirvana persisted in the plane's official publication in D&D sourcebooks in 1978, which was first introduced into sourcebooks with Advanced D&D... Advanced Dungeons & Dragons Dungeon Master's Guide.
And this was the... You said it was the pure law plane, right?
Lawful neutral, so...
Well, yeah, but back then it would have just been law, right?
No. By the time Advanced Dungeons and Dragons came along...
Oh,
that's...
Yeah.
It was lawful neutral.
It was lawful neutral.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going back in further.
The plane, now known as Mechanus, did not actually receive that distinction until 1994 with the release of the Planescape campaign setting.
Oh, dang.
Jeez, so it lasted as Nirvana for...
Almost 20 years.
Almost 20 years, yeah.
Wow.
Which...
Okay.
in early D&D, there weren't a ton of changes. Like, early on, it would be like, all right, we released this. Now we're sticking with this for, like, 5 years.
Right. They would continue to update it here and there, like, sporadically. But the name change didn't really happen until, like, 90s, 2000s.
Yeah. Planescape actually gave an in-universe explanation for this new distinction. It's the damn Prime's fault.
I mean,
it's the damn Prime's fault.
I can imagine that it is, but also I love when they do that.
I know.
Like, give an in-universe explanation instead of just being like, oh, well, yeah, we're doing something different now. Like, they actually give an explanation in kayfabe.
So basically, the people of the Prime Plane started calling it Nirvana and never bothered to learn what the people who actually lived there called it. After that, it was called Mechanus consistently, and occasionally the Clockwork Nirvana of Mechanus, which is a pretty dope name.
Yeah.
The Clockwork Nirvana
of Mechanus.
Of Mechanus. I do like that. That is actually pretty cool.
Really dope. But also, that's such a resident of the Prime Material Plane thing to do, is to just call it something completely different than the people who actually live there call it.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Like, I'm sure if Planescape released an update for 5th edition, they'd say the reason why the Feywilds were called the Plane of Faerie for a long time was because no one bothered to ask the Fey that lived there why.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, Wizards of the Coast, if you're listening, Planescape campaign setting for 5th edition, do it.
Yeah, no, I say go for it.
Like, also, if you're hiring.
Also that.
Taylor would like a job.
Thank you. But for ease, I'll be calling it Mechanus from here on out, even when the source material calls it Nirvana.
Okay. Does it look like the clock tower from Mario 64?
Actually, I'm about to describe exactly what it looks like.
Okay, because if so, that's hell. That's just hell.
So, going back to Advanced Dungeons & Dragons for a bit, in 1987, the Manual of the Planes was written by Jeff Grubb, and it gave a pretty detailed description of the plane as a plane of perfectly regimented order, equal light and dark, heat and cold, and equal parts of the four elements. All matter has its place and knows its place in Mechanus. It contains no passions, no illusions, or pain. Even individual consciousness only exists in Mechanus's perfect order in the name of perfection.
Dang.
So, I'm sorry. The thing that stuck out the most there to me is no pain.
No pain.
So, you just feel no pain on this plane.
Pretty much, yeah.
There is no passion. There is serenity.
It's a little bit like the fucking Jedi Code.
It just like out of all those, that one in particular stuck out because I was like, wait a minute.
See,
you
the passion,
don't feel pain.
Yeah. See, the passion stuck out to me because it reminded me of the Jedi. But you know.
Yeah. Well, because pain, I mean, I guess technically you could consider it the opposite of like passion and bliss.
Right.
Mm-hmm. This actually stuck out to me and I actually looked into it a little bit. Because it says no illusions, illusion magic does not work in Mechanus. It just doesn't work.
Dang.
It's described as looking more like a flimsy outline and you wasted your spell slot.
A flimsy outline.
You're like, oh yeah, this is totally something else. And everyone's like,
no.
You know we can.
No, at that point, right? You're just like, look, I'm an impressionist painting.
That's really funny, actually. So, Mechanus is a single infinite plane with planar layers, technically, that extend in all directions without a true floor or ceiling.
Oh, God. It's okay. Like an Escher painting.
It's not actually planar layers. It's literally just, think of it like space. So you have, like, planets that are, like, different distances from each other.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no, like, layering.
So it's not an Escher painting.
No.
Okay.
This actually makes Mechanus different from almost every single other outer plane, which are almost universally defined by their layers. The Nine Hells, the Bitopia 2 thing. Mount Celestia is literally a mountain.
That sounds, like, terrible.
Yeah.
Like, something about that just bothers
me. I mean, it is a vast, empty void. Except, what?
Oh, except.
Except.
Mechanus is filled with huge interlocking wheels like cogs in a clock.
Ew.
They're massive, 500 or more miles in radius.
Jesus.
Wow.
These clockwork gears are infinite, stretching on throughout this endless void. They interlock around their edges and spin the entire plane in unison.
So it is the clock tower from Mars.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Okay.
It's hell for Lewin, specifically.
That sounds, there's something about that that bothers
me. So this whole plane basically works as a clock?
Kind of,
like, just because, like, the gears are basically what's turning this plane?
Pretty much, yeah. Each cog has its own gravity. So disks meet at right angles without disturbing the inhabitants on another one.
Wow.
So, like, people live on these cogs. They build their structures. Some of them terraform them.
What the hell?
The gravity extends above and below each disk, even though usually only one side is inhabited.
Mm-hmm.
Insert flat earth jokes here.
I was thinking. I was like, that sounds oddly familiar.
So the void is actually filled with air, making flight between the disks possible. It's not like actually space. It just looks like space.
Huh.
If what?
Nothing.
Are you trying to figure out how they actually, like, move
around? No. I have qualms. I'll let you finish first.
If a being is beyond the gravitational pull of a disk, they float as though in the astral plane, but are naturally pulled down towards the closest disk.
Like, see, cool. I was going to say, I remember reading...
It's video game physics.
Researching for our campaign, astral plane doesn't have, you know, up, down, left, right. You can kind of just, like, will yourself to move.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I was thinking that this would function as, except in this case, when they get closer to a cog, that gravity will...
Unless they have a flight speed. If they have a flight speed, they can
choose to just fly past it.
Certainly. Okay.
Which I'm going to guess that most, at least inhabitants of this plane, have flight.
Some.
Oh.
Yeah. More on that in a moment.
Yeah.
Actually, in a while. More on that towards the end.
More on that later.
So in 2001, Jeff Grubb, Bruce R. Cordell, and David Noonan re-released the Manual of the Planes for third edition under Wizards of the Coast.
Cool.
This, alongside the previously mentioned Planescape campaign setting, specifically the Plane of Law edition, it fully fleshed out each of the planes, including Mechanus.
Sweet.
As Mechanus is an outer plane, it exists as a plane that the spirits of dead mortals reside in or simply pass through after death. In previous editions, though, it wasn't always intended to be a final stop. Several alternatives are described, including Judgment. And Judgment is capitalized.
Oh, I love it when words that aren't usually capitalized are randomly capitalized.
So does that mean that Judgment is assigned to a being?
Dead characters pass through the outer planes where they are judged by their deities. Those who fail are retained on the outer planes, in which case they are called petitioners, or returned to the material plane for reincarnation. Those who are judged worthy join with the essence of the plane itself, transform into servants of their deity, or pass on to a new level of reality unknown to even the deities themselves. The reason I mention this is because Mechanist petitioners are described as being notoriously honest and literal. They don't interpret instructions or requests, but do exactly what is asked of them.
Oh my god, it's... Crap, what's his name? Guardians of the Galaxy.
Drax.
Drax. It's his entire people.
Like, yeah.
Also...
Everything is literal.
Mm-hmm.
That awkward moment when you tell one of your friends on Mechanus to go fuck themselves.
Oh.
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 Or to go dig a hole.
Or go die in a fire.
Oh. So this can be true even if the action leads to death.
Oh, for shit.
Petitioners of Mechanus believe they are constantly being tested in their devotion to order and law.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they would walk into a fire.
They would go play in traffic.
Oh, my God. Okay, that's...
Sad.
Hilarious.
Sad, but also hilarious. I can't help but just be like, yeah, I can see my players... Looking at you two here.
Yeah.
Just being like, one of them pisses you off and just like, yeah, go kill yourself. They just...
Aw.
See, I love how, like, I know it's because we're the ones that are here, but I feel like Jacoby was excluded from that statement and he shouldn't be excluded.
Oh, no, he's a part of that too.
Okay, just wanted to put that out there.
Jacoby should be at the forefront of that statement.
Probably.
So, anyways, petitioners for each of the plans have kind of different ways that they present after death. you know, like their spirit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, yeah.
So the petitioners and mechanists often adopt a stylized version of their mortal bodies. Despite outward differences, all petitioners on mechanists are alike in their frightening honesty and submersion of individuality.
Oh, my favorite type of person.
Which, honestly, I really enjoy, like, the beginning part of a stylized version of their mortal bodies because Mechanus is very clockworky, so I'm just picturing clockwork like versions.
Steampunk robots.
That's kind of what I was picturing, yeah.
We're getting there.
Okay, all right. Also, alternative interpretation is that they're the pixies from Fairly Odd Parents.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, also, I should note, y'all, I tried to give 4th edition its fair shake, but I really couldn't. I really couldn't.
Uh-oh.
Mostly
back.
Because Mechanus does not exist in 4th edition.
Oh, no.
I remember on the Planes episode, I briefly mentioned that 4th edition fucked the Planes and the alignment.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Mechanus doesn't exist.
Okay, so...
Because lawful neutral doesn't exist.
Yes.
Right.
It's unaligned.
Wait, what?
Lawful neutral.
Lawful
is one
neutral.
Of the
yeah,
it falls under unaligned. Okay.
So they just decided that they were just gonna get rid of this entire planar system.
Pretty much, yeah.
Because they're idiots who decided to go with unaligned instead of just lawful neutral, because it makes any fucking difference at all.
Or that unaligned couldn't be something else.
Yeah.
Right.
In addition to that,
because you know
that
they couldn't have.
Interesting.
They couldn't have you know just left this plane there and just be like, I mean, it's unaligned. No, we're going to fucking remove it because we changed everything else. Why not?
Yeah.
We don't need that.
I'm done.
So they kind of just put the onus on other planes of existence to pick up the what like, was missing from Mechanus.
They're like, you can have these robots.
Yeah.
Again, would have been easier for them to just ride in, just be like, unaligned plane.
Yeah.
Done. Instead, it's like, nope, we're going to put you here and here and here.
Look. You're missing this part here. I thought you said you were done.
I believe the Dungeon Master's Guide for 4th edition, it does mention that if you want to keep Mechanus in, you would just make it an unaligned plane. But it is not part of the core pack for 4th edition.
I mean, at least they... At least somebody tried.
So, yet again, 4th edition is just... You know, like Mechanus and doesn't exist.
Can we be done?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I want to discuss the other inhabitants on Mechanus.
Okay.
Before
you do, the qualms that I had earlier, which I know that it's like more complicated than this, because not necessarily everyone is totally the same. Like every person who inhabits these outer planes is totally the same. But how do they build things or... You know, discover these facts about the planet's gravity and plane's gravity and all this other stuff. If they have no passion, those are pursuits.
Mostly from people exploring who are not inhabitants.
Yeah, because like those are pursuits.
Yes.
You have to care about them in order to do them.
Yes.
And if you have no passion, you don't care about anything.
Exactly. Like, I really don't like lawful neutral. At least, like, I'm sure, like, as a alignment for a character, it can be. I mean, hell, in our last campaign, our monk was lawful neutral, and he was one of the most interesting characters we had.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it, you know, I'm not saying that it can't be entertaining for, like, characters or things like that.
It's just as an extreme.
Yeah. It's, like, very extreme examples of it are just, like, snore.
It's unnerving in a way that the Kenku actually kind of were about the idea of not having creativity.
Yeah.
And originality.
It's very unnerving.
Like, I don't like the idea of not being able to be passionate about something.
Right.
I mean, I'm passionate about Dungeons & Dragons.
Clearly.
Yeah. And Travis is passionate about his hatred of 4th edition.
Clearly.
And I'm passionate about something, I'm sure.
Shut up.
That's true. Anyway, I mean, like I said, I know that that's not everyone who crosses into that plane and things are more complicated than that.
Well, and that's the thing is that...
But that to me just, you know...
I will say, for its part, almost every source kind of makes a point of saying, like, the people on Mechanus, like... It's not outright stated, but it's very implied that the people on Mechanus don't care about, like, how everything works and what else doing. They just care about making it work. Yeah.
Okay.
Making it work and maintaining it.
Okay.
And it's all about maintenance and order and law.
for them. Everyone else who ventures through is like, this is weird, but I also want to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. Okay.
So, of the other inhabitants of Mechanus that also don't give a shit about how stuff works, are Merits, or Maruts. I'm going to call them Maruts, just be, and you'll figure out why in a minute.
Okay.
So, Maruts are red-eyed, unliving giants, seemingly carved from a single piece of onyx. They wear golden armor, but it appears that they have no joints or seams, which is why it says that they look like they're carved from a single piece of onyx.
Oh, dang.
Maruts are constructs of Rudra, the god of disease, imbued with intelligence and sentience by him. He created all of them, but they've since changed hands quite a bit. Some of them are still in service to him. They exist only to spread the will of their master or serve those their master has chosen. Maruts typically spread disease and harm their environments by nature when under the will of Rudra, but they can occasionally serve good deities as gifts from Rudra, which is why they've changed hands quite a bit, because he gifts them.
Okay.
And they spread things revered by those gods instead, like love, magic, passion, loyalty, life. So, like, they just spread things.
That's kind of like an odd...
Kind of dope, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of cool. It's just, like, kind of an odd thing. I feel like even for a deity to
make
and be like, yeah, I'm going to create this thing that kind of does nothing but spread disease if I have that.
Or if someone else uses it for a different reason.
Well, he's the god of disease. He's interested in spreading disease.
Right.
But he's also...
We're friends now, have a giant.
Pretty much. He keeps his bargains and his promises, and he is very giving when he has received, basically.
Hmm. Yeah. So you would say they're not without their merits.
So Maruts and Rudra both exist in Hinduism, which now you understand why I decided to go back and say Maruts.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I did look up Rudra because I was very curious about that. I couldn't find a very good source for Maruts pronunciation, but... I'm going to go with that. But much like a lot of things in Dungeons & Dragons that take their inspiration from outside sources, they basically have very little to do with their roots.
Their my roots.
I knew that was coming. You should have known.
I should have, but I didn't somehow.
Yeah, you should have figured out a different word. So, I got you with both pronunciations. You're not safe.
No, I'm not. Maruts got a relative in third edition through constructs called Inevitables.
Inevitables?
Inevitables.
Inevitables.
Oh, okay. I thought you were trying to say, like, inept. Like,
inept.
Is something that is inept. And I was going to be like, that's me.
No.
Construct.
Inevitables. Okay.
Inevitables. They exist simply to enforce the natural laws of the universe. They hunt down and punish those who violate the order, like fugitives, those who cheat death, and those who break contracts.
Okay, so is this just for Mechanist, or is this...
They exist everywhere. So, or they can exist everywhere.
So they're, like, from Mechanist.
They're basically, like, bounty hunters for
law.
People that break the law of whatever...
Pretty much.
Decide the law is.
It's a pretty big, like... In order to get an inevitable sent after you, you have to do a pretty big thing. But after it... completes its first mission, it kind of just travels around maintaining order where it sees that order needs to be maintained, basically.
Oh, so it's my least favorite type of person.
All I picture is the Raven Queen using these for the ones that cheat death.
Oh, yeah, I could totally see that.
That could be fun, yeah.
Yeah. So an Inevitable receives its first mission upon creation, hunts it down, and doles out appropriate punishment, typically death.
I mean, naturally.
Yeah.
So their sense of, like, if they just happened upon somewhere, like, their sense of what is right or lawful is the perspective of the lawful neutral mechanist.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So they could easily end up somewhere... Like, they could end up in the chaotic good outer plane.
Just killing a bunch of people.
Just killing a bunch of people because it's different. You know what I mean?
So, despite being single-minded in an attempt to complete their tasks, they are under strict orders and strict programming to leave innocence alone. So, unless someone is actively doing something that would require this type of punishment, they'd usually probably go ignore it or do a smaller punishment.
Like, just knock them out.
Yeah.
And instead of killing you, it's just going to, like, maim, break your arm.
Yeah,
and
just, like, maim you. That's it.
Like, I
mean, I just want to know what the rules are.
Right, no. Like, they are under strict orders to leave innocents alone. So.
Okay.
It's very much, like, don't just be cruel. Mm-hmm. It's not like it's lawful evil.
Yeah.
Here. It's lawful neutral. So, inevitables are made from gold and silver clockwork.
Ooh. Oh,
dope.
And they look like golden armored 12-foot tall giants.
Oh.
Jesus. They're probably a pain in the ass to fight.
I'm sure, yeah.
Unlike most constructs, inevitables, as an extension of Marut's, can think, learn, and remember. In between missions, an inevitable wanders around passively observing life, which absolutely resonates with me. Like, the idea of this thing that has never known life and has only ever known its job just going around and observing life.
See, I made a joke about them being my least favorite type of person who goes and enforces their ideology on other people, but now I feel kind of bad for them.
Right? Well, no one knows who created the Inevitables. Even the Inevitables.
Oh, shoot.
So, like, they don't even know who created them?
They just know that they have a job and they need to carry it out.
I will say, it was probably a dickhead.
Probably.
Just saying.
Yeah. More than likely.
So, I mentioned at the beginning of this episode that I'm going to cover the Modrons.
Yes.
Before we get to the Modrons, there's one more thing.
Okay.
Formians.
What? Could you say that again?
Formians. Did I say that right? Let me just double check, actually.
Okay, no, you're good. I just...
sure that we heard it right.
You said it, and my brain went to space.
Formians.
The duration of you saying it, so I had to come back.
So, Formians are only known to come from planes devoted to law.
Okay.
They resemble upright ants, kind of like an ant centaur thing. Yeah.
What the hell?
What?
They have... Yeah. Straight up, like...
So, like, four of their legs are on the ground and two of them are...
Yeah, like, holding weaponry and, like,
Jesus.
Usable, like, hands.
That's a little frightening.
I can't make a point.
Keep workshopping it. It's
I'll
fine.
Think about it.
So, they have these hive cities and operate to serve their queens and constantly colonize. Their goal is to colonize and expand to all worlds, bringing everything into Formian law... in order, or stamp it out.
Great.
Yeah, so they're featured prominently on Mechanus because they have quite a few colonies on their cogs. And, they've yet to large-scale clash with Modrons, but people guess it would be epic and disastrous.
I would assume so.
Are they just, like, ant people?
Pretty much.
So how big are they?
Oh, God.
Let me double-check on
that. Oh, God.
Because, like, I feel like that would be a deciding factor, too.
Yeah.
But
because I'm not,
they have to be pretty. Well, I guess they don't have to be. They could just be like human sized and just.
Well, so the workers are about 3 feet long and 2.5 feet tall.
Okay.
And then the taskmaster, you know, it's like regular ant rankings, basically.
Right. They get bigger.
Yeah.
True.
5 feet long and 4.5 feet tall.
Okay.
And then warriors, 5 feet long, 4.5 feet tall as well.
What about the queens?
That's, 10 feet long, 4 feet tall.
Oh, that's...
So they stay below 5 feet tall, but they're fucking long.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh. I mean, I like the idea. But I like the concept of it all.
They're scary, and they absolutely stamp out chaos wherever they go, and... Everything should be under them, basically.
I think that's interesting, their use of ants, though, for that.
Because it's very ant-like.
Because it's very, like, the way that ants, like, behave. That's, actually really, really good.
So.
To be used in that way.
Then there are the Modrons.
Then there are the Modrons.
And then there were the Modrons.
Which I will be happy to tell you guys about after a quick break.
Damn it.
Yeah,
I knew it.
Yeah. Fine.
Hey, everybody. Thank you guys so much for listening to our Mechanist episode. I know it's a lot, but if you like this episode and you like the podcast, please consider contributing to our Patreon, which is just the regular at Dungeonpedia. We only have a couple of tiers available, but anything you throw into the bucket will help us to just continue to improve, help us purchase equipment, and just, you know, get the ball rolling on this thing. I mean, I say that. The ball's already rolling.
It's been rolling.
And thank you.
just again, thank you guys so much. Yeah. And with that, we're just going to go on through to the rest of the little ad break real quick.
Yes. So if you're interested in another actual play podcast, we have ours, Projectile Dysfunction, that has been out now for
about 2 months.
About 2 months.
Almost 2 months.
We have...
maybe a month.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know.
We've gotten pretty deep.
I can't time.
But
we do have that out. Like I said, it's called Projectile Dysfunction. You can go and follow us on Twitter there, which is just at ProjectileCast. Receive updates, all that lovely fun stuff. And then you can find out more information about where to listen to us from that Twitter account.
Yes. You can follow us for Dungeonpedia stuff at Dungeonpedia on Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. We also have our email address, dungeonpedia.podcast@gmail.com, where you can send us episode suggestions and
really anything.
Whatever you want, honestly.
We read it, we respond to it, even if it's not nonsensical, trust me, we'll still...
Yeah, or if our phones decide to not notify us for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Which has been an issue, so if we don't reply for a while, it's just because our phones failed to notify us.
But I feel like...
Don't be afraid to shoot us another email if that happens.
Yeah, like double text us.
It's fine.
Yep, we will accept it. Subscribe to us wherever you listen to our Dungeonpedia episodes to get notifications of the new ones. We do release it on our social medias when a new episode is live, but usually not until later, in like the afternoon, sometimes early evening. So if you want to get notifications immediately, subscribe to us there and you can know when we update a new episode. Also, while you're doing that, rate us, review us, ignore the kitty in the background. He's going a little crazy today. Spread the word. Most importantly, spread the word.
Yes.
Reviews and everything help us greatly on iTunes and stuff.
And whatever, but...
But
more than
spreading
anything.
The word is probably the best form of getting...
Us out there.
And we appreciate it. It has actually helped a lot.
Every time we post a new episode, I'm just amazed at the fact that, first of all, anyone is listening. And second of all, how many people are listening.
Yeah.
So thank you.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So do all that. That would help us greatly. Continue listening in and hopefully we never disappoint you.
And if we do, we're sorry.
You know who doesn't disappoint us, though, is Alexander Nakarada with our theme song, Blacksmith.
Yeah.
Thank you, Alexander.
Thank you, Alexander.
Yes. And with that, I believe we have taken enough time to do our little ad break, maybe given some people enough time to calm their minds to get back to Mechanus and throw more numbers.
Yay!
Number theory, kind of.
All right.
Modrons.
All right. So let me read this part from Planescape campaign setting real quick to set the stage. The greatest of Mechanus' lairs is Regulus, the realm of the Modrons. These bizarre creatures live absolutely regimented existences, following a strict hierarchy all up to the Primus, the One and Prime, a greater power on this plane. There are few petitioners found in Regulus, for there are no organized cults of Primus, at least not on any known Prime material world. Those few petitioners that are here were once devoted to the cause of utter and absolute order. Primus seems to exist just to supervise the Modrons, which maintain the existence of the plane. Modrons are often found in other realms of the plane, polishing cog teeth and generally fussing over the great wheels.
Nice.
So basically, Modrons exist just to maintain the plane and themselves and serve. And then Primus exists only to make sure that the Modrons maintain their jobs and to supervise them.
So Modrons are kind of like soldier-esque?
Yes, they are soldiers and workers, and basically they just...
Just whatever they need to do to keep the plane going, basically.
They are beings of absolute law that adhere to a hive-like hierarchy. And they constantly are tending to Mechanus and its gears, and they... The best way I can think of it, of just at least in my head, is like gear work that exists only to maintain itself.
Mm-hmm.
So
they remind me of the from Mass Effect.
Yeah.
The keepers.
Yeah,
keepers. The little guys that maintain the Citadel.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're kind of like, nah, I can't remember the word for it now, but it's theoretical. The machines that basically constantly keep themselves going that don't break down.
Right, yeah.
I don't remember what the hell it's called now, but
yeah,
theoretical,
yeah.
Like in real life, obviously, D&D, they exist.
They do really
yeah.
exist. I enjoy the concept of like, well, I say like redundancy, but not like they kind of exist, you know.
They exist to fuel their existence.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
They exist to exist.
I can't think of a good way to really put into words like why I think that's cool, but
it just is. I think it just kind of is,
especially in this like, and I'm not saying that this is necessarily contradictory, but especially in this kind of setting where it seems like things exist based on their functionality.
Yeah.
So something that exists, that existence justifies its purpose, kind of is neat to me.
It's somewhat beautiful.
I can't words.
So Modrons are, I mentioned that they're a hive-like hierarchical pyramid. Mm-hmm. So each Modron receives commands from superiors and delegates orders to underlings. And it carries out commands with total obedience, utmost efficiency, and absence of morality or ego. The way I think of Modrons and mechanists by existence is they're like, morality should have absolutely no say in things when it comes to law and order.
Yeah.
And I think of that in a little bit of an extension towards the other, like, neutral alignment. Mm-hmm. Like, the horizontal line on the alignment chart.
Yeah.
With true neutral being, like, morality and laws should have no bearing over absolute balance. Mm-hmm. And then for chaotic neutral, you have morality and laws should have absolutely no bearing when it comes to me doing whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah, exactly.
I do whatever I want.
So, Modrons have no sense of self, pretty much. There's no I, but only we or us.
Same. Just kidding. Just kidding. I'm a very selfish person. I don't know why I said that.
Modrons adhere to their hierarchy and their ranks. There's no going around your boss to talk to your boss's boss. You talk to your boss and your boss talks to his boss.
Oh, yeah? You don't break your chain of command.
Nope.
Ever.
Modrons more than one rank away from, like, up or down are either too advanced or too simple to understand. You can't even talk to them.
Oh, I feel what? That way about. Yeah. Never mind. Nope.
What?
So if a Modron is destroyed, its remains disintegrate.
Oh.
A replacement from the next lowest rank then transforms in a flash of light and gains the physical form of its new rank.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So the only way to advance is to hope that a higher ranker
dies
and you get chosen to.
But they don't hope
replace.
For this. They don't have any passion.
Yeah, shit, you're right.
They don't care to get promoted.
They just know that.
How big are these guys?
I'll get to that because it varies.
They just know that their purpose is this, and when this transformation happens, they go to the next rank and then continue whatever that job is.
Because,
yeah.
For some reason, I'm imagining, like, what would be, like, a funny scene in a movie where, like, your adventuring party is just, like, watching a bunch of them work, and then, like, one of them accidentally gets, like, blasted by something, like a hot steam vent or something like that, and just, like, dies.
Mm-hmm.
And then another one just, like, a flash of light, and then it, like, runs over and starts doing the other one's job, and the whole party's, like, looking at each other like, what the fuck?
What just what happened?
What the fuck?
And then all of them just like, you know, we probably shouldn't be here.
Or like a Spirited Away where they're all, like, carrying coal. I don't know why I thought of that. Anyway.
So the promoted Modron is replaced by one of the underlings
mm-hmm.
in the same manner, all the way to the lowest levels of the hierarchy, and there a new Modron is created by the Primus. So the steady stream of Modrons just keeps on going.
It's just endless. So they're never, like, their numbers are never one short. They always just...
Are one heavy.
Yeah.
It's always the same.
They
it's,
always stay the same. They just replace, and then the yeah. Primus makes...
A new one.
A new lower rank.
Yes.
Lowest rank.
Mm-hmm.
What? That's actually pretty cool, though.
It is. I'm a big fan of it, honestly.
It's like all these flashes of light just keep happening until
Yeah, there's just like an assembly line of them.
So there are 5 types of base modrons and then 9 types of hierarchical modrons.
Good lord.
Okay.
Base is lower than hierarchical, plus the one and only Primus.
Yes.
Most of these descriptions come from the Planescape Monstrous Compendium, but really not much has changed.
Okay.
So monodrones make up the bulk of Mechanus. They are small spheres with a single eye, wings.
Oh my god.
And 2 arms and legs. They are Mike Wazowski.
They are, I'm just saying.
They are Mike Wazowski with wings.
Instead of arms, it's wings.
They're made out of clockwork. Also, if you guys listening at home have never seen a modron, go look them up. They are kind of adorable.
I actually don't think I've seen a modron.
Neither have I. See, I keep wanting to put the E at the end of their name because I think like drone.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Well,
they're so cute.
Oh, I take it back. I have actually seen some of them.
Yeah, I think I've shown them to you before.
Oh my god. Those are
adorable.
Cute, and then they start to get
uncanny valley.
Terrifying.
Yeah, they're very uncanny valley, especially the bigger ones.
I like the art in 5th edition for the monodrone because it's like doing a little thing where it's like biting its lower lip.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it is. I like, oh my god. They're kind of uncanny valley. Some people with some types of sensibilities probably find them kind of creepy, but I think they're cute.
So I will say, I think monodrones might be my favorite just because of how stupid they are. Monodrones are single function modrons assigned to simple labor or service in the regiments of the modron army. Thousands of them exist.
Yeah.
Armed with spears and crossbows, and they are impressive when marshaled against the foe. That's from the book. I will mention they are 1/8 challenge rating.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm looking at it, I'm like, I mean...
You'd probably be looking at like thousands of them at a time.
Well, though. Yeah.
And that's true. They don't... That's the thing, is you would probably encounter multiple.
You won't encounter 1 or 2 at a time.
Yeah.
You would be so encountering probably like 10, 15, 20.
I believe 12 is usually what they're... Yeah. In segments up.
So, like, that would be impressive. An army of 1,000 of those.
That'd
be
impressive. So, they exist only for their work. They are unswerving and single-minded.
So, they can't even, like, talk?
They're barely intelligent. They are unable to speak or read.
Aww.
Yep.
But can understand commands spoken in the tongue of their race, although they will only heed a duodrone.
Which is going to be the next one up, I assume.
Yes. They are capable of only 1 action at a time. If you tell them to attack, they will do so until slain, even if that means attacking each other after the enemy has been obliterated.
Oh, they're so stupid.
They are.
Oh my god.
So you have to tell them to stop?
Yes.
Like, okay, we won. Stop killing each other.
Pretty much. That's why they require a duodrone to supervise
them. Oh, run, forest, run, and then stop.
Yeah.
It's like that scene.
There's this line in there that says, "It is fortunate that they feed on the very substance of air around them. Otherwise, it would be necessary to order them to eat every day."
Oh, my God.
God.
So it's a good thing that you don't have to tell them to breathe. So.
Oh, my God.
Duodrones are the next one up.
Yeah.
They're capable of 2 functions.
Oh.
And they supervise 12 units of monodrone.
Okay, cool.
They also perform complex tasks beyond the ability of monodrones. They are blocky and rectangular with a lot of strength.
Yeah, we're still looking at the...
Yeah.
They're 1/4 challenge rating.
Oh, they're moving up.
Their lips are like...
They're a little...
Pretty...
uncanny.
Yeah.
They're actually kind of like big.
Yeah.
Yeah, for... And they're especially big for what you would imagine exists on a weird blocky robot.
Yeah.
I mean, their strength is pretty decent. They're still not terribly intelligent.
I mean, they're twice as strong as monodrones. So,
true.
You know.
They serve as corporals and sergeants or as special shock troops. They have a thrusting and crushing weapon. And typically, they are only given a single command at one time so that they have ability to react. Because monodrones don't have an ability to react.
They just do what
So you could tell a duodrone to attack. But it could also defend itself.
Actually, the example is, if ordered to attack, for example, they will do so until the enemy is slain and then seek out a new enemy rather than attacking each other.
Yeah, we're sitting there stabbing the air.
Yeah. The duo drones actually have limited conversational ability, but they can report their operations and observations clearly and completely.
Cool.
Okay, so they can at least talk, if only barely.
They can talk to monodrones and tridrones, which tridrones are the next one up.
Should have called them trio drones.
Trio
missed
drone.
Opportunity.
You said tridrone?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I see the naming scheme on these now.
Yeah.
That took me longer to...
And those are a challenge rating of 1/2, and now you see how the challenge rating scheme is going up as right. well. They appear as three-sided pyramids with spidery arms and legs.
I fucking love it. They look so cool.
They supervise squads of, you guessed it, 12 duo drones.
Dang.
Which means that they technically supervise squads of 12 times 12 is 124.
144?
Oh, 144. I can't math.
144 monodrones.
Yes. So, and the duodrones pass the orders to the monodrones, because the monodrones can't understand tridrones.
They're too complex.
Oh my god.
They use too big of words.
Tridrones can carry out multiple tasks on their own. I think probably three.
Probably.
I would assume.
Typically, they receive a general order, which they divide into smaller tasks to be fulfilled by the duodrones. In a modern army, tridrones serve in special companies equipped with 3 javelins per being, which they hurl before entering melee.
Beautiful.
They are capable of reporting actions and observations and actually planning limited objectives on the battlefield. They also speak their own language and common.
Huh, nice.
So they're the first... one in the hierarchy capable of common.
They also have beautiful, luscious beauty guru lips.
They do.
Their lips are nice and plump.
So, quadrones are the next one up, and they have a challenge rating of 1. Quadrones comprise the upper level of worker modrones. They serve as field officers, and each battalion has a special dozen unit, more of the 12, which contains nothing but quadrone warriors. They're shaped like cubes and have 4 arms, and they're capable of wielding 2 bows at the same time.
Nice. And they have wings also.
So
yes, some of them are winged.
I will say that at least the picture that is shown on D&D Beyond doesn't show them with 4 arms.
Well, actually, I was getting to that.
Oh.
Some of them are winged, but if they don't have wings, they're replaced with a second set of arms.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, see, I was thinking that maybe they would just use they could use their legs as arms
nope.
in that case. That's
pretty cool.
Cool. It's a squared Goro.
Yeah. So, they're 4 function creatures, and they can report actions and observations, make plans, react to unexpected occurrences, and act to remedy them.
Cool.
They have senses equal to 150% of a normal human. Which I don't totally know what means, but, like, was a cool thing to include.
Okay, wait. Say that again?
All quadrons have senses equal to 150% of normal human senses.
So whatever senses a human has, they have 1.5 of that.
Basically.
So a certain distance that a human can see, they can see 150%
okay.
further.
That makes
which
sense.
Is, like, 3 miles, I think.
Yeah, so they could see 4.5 miles.
Yeah. Part of this is because they're equipped with sensory organs on all 6 sides of their cubic bodies and are never surprised under normal circumstances. You
no,
cannot
fine.
Surprise them.
Nice. I like these things, actually. I like all of the
modrons. Yeah, they look kind of dope.
They are. I'm a big fan of them. So pentadrones are the highest base modron. So after this, we're going to start getting into the hierarchical. And Travis is making a face, I'm assuming because he looked at the picture.
Uh-huh.
Don't worry, I'll describe it for those of you at home if you're not already looking at it. First, I want to mention that their challenge rating is 2. They serve as the police of the base population and as intermediaries between base modrons and what they view as godlike hierarchical modrons. So pentadrones receive instructions passed down by the rules of Mechanus and see... that they are implemented by the quadrons and then all the way down.
Further down.
Yeah. And they act, like I said, they act as police if necessary, but there's not that much, like, rogue stuff going on.
I
yeah.
feel like the only time something, like, rogue would happen would be outsiders.
Pretty and much, and if, tampering. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe if, like, some drone ends up malfunctioning somehow?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, as five function beings, they can communicate, operate, monitor, plan, and manage. They can also react to unplanned situations. A dozen of them are always assigned to each regimental headquarters as an elite unit, while others actually command the regiment. Cool. So, now getting to the description.
Mm-hmm.
They look wild.
Yeah.
Like, I'm into it, but...
They're five armed creatures that resemble starfish on thin, stilt-like legs. They have powerful arm attacks and a paralysis gas, which they emit in a stream 2 feet in diameter and 5 feet in length.
See, I didn't think that those were arms, but okay, yeah, no. Those
yeah, the just... faces, the arms have faces on them.
Yeah, they do, yeah. And they're...
angry faces.
All angry. Oh, they're angry faces.
The legs are actually what kill me.
Yeah, it has five legs as well.
And they're, like, so skinny and tiny yeah. compared I like to the
like little stilts.
I like the paralyzing gas yeah. effect, though. That's pretty cool. That
yeah.
I'm guessing that shoots from their central starfish.
Where the mouth is on a real starfish.
So even outside of Mechanus, if for some reason they're ever outside of Mechanus, they are still immune to illusion and mind-affecting magic. They also have double human senses.
Okay. So they can hear a lot better. They can see a lot better. They can... They're just better all around, yeah. really.
Because they're machines.
Yeah.
So now for the hierarchical Modrons.
Yeah.
So first, the hierarchical Modrons all have, like, cleric spell abilities or wizard spell abilities, some type of spell ability. Some of them even have psionics.
Oh, shit. Hell yeah.
They're also completely immune to psionics.
Yeah, because they're machines, you know.
Secondly, there is always a set amount of hierarchical Modrons. Like, even more so than, like, the lower ones. Like, obviously, there's a certain amount for the amount underneath them, but there is always a set amount.
But hypothetically, if like, they were needed for, like, army purposes, like, Primus could create maybe another 48 monodrones.
Right.
Or whatever, you know, and then the number would just be 48 more than it was.
Right.
Yeah.
But in this case, they're always the same.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
For instance, there are exactly 100 decatons.
You're about to say there are always one.
Decaton.
Decaton.
They appear as 10 tentacled spears on stumpy legs. They oversee the physical welfare of all of the base Modrons, and they are basically the voice speaking to the base Modrons. One decaton is assigned to each sector of the realm, while the remaining serve on the staffs of the legions of the Modron army. The spherical decatons fly by generating a light gas within their body, rendering them lighter than air.
Nice.
I think of them as like little hot air balloons with tentacles.
Yeah, they look disturbing, honestly.
You know, they look kind of...
bad.
Well, like mechanical beholders?
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit, like not a lot, but there's a... slight resemblance I can see.
Oh.
I like it, though.
I hate it.
Well, let's move on, then.
I hate it, actually.
Nonatons have 81 in number and are the principal overseers of law and order. Now, that's a little bit... What's the word I'm looking for here? Everything in Mechanus, but moving on. These cylindrical Modrons act as captains and chief inspectors of the Pentadrone police force. One Nonaton serves each sector, 9 serve the Tertians, and the 8 remaining report directly to Primus. Each Nonaton has 12 Pentadrone lieutenants. Each lieutenant commands 12 Quadrone sergeants, and each sergeant commands 12 Tridrone police.
They like the number 12.
Yes.
12 seems to be the magic number here. The cylindrical aspect of it is like...
weird.
Nasty.
Like water heater?
Yeah. It looks like a water heater came to life.
A mechanical living water heater.
They're crazy water heaters.
I like it though.
So they usually head investigations for rogue Modron units in the event of compromise or a rogue party causing a malfunction. And they also handle small invasions from other planes on their own.
Oh. So another plane comes in and they're like, you're not probably going to fight the army of, like, the mono drones or whatever initially. It's just going to be the... I'm sorry, how did you say it?
Nonotones. Nonotones.
The nonotones will be the defenders at that point.
Yeah, in which case they usually attempt to figure out the motives and then act accordingly. I mean, they're lawful and they, like, want to maintain their law, but if they're not getting in the way of Mechanus's laws, they're not going to, like, just immediately, like, kill you.
Right. They're going to go out, try to figure out, okay, what's the plan?
What's going on?
And if, I guess, they sense that it's hostility.
Or chaos.
They'll...
Unbridled chaos.
Take care of it. But otherwise, if they're like, yeah, this isn't going to really harm us.
Yeah.
Just at that point, they just kind of float like, off whatever. And, like, don't fuck up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there are 64 octons, each one in charge of each sector of the plane in the Modron realm.
Oh, man, there's a lot of numbers being thrown out here.
Yeah. So they govern the wheels and can command any army stationed there. The lesser Modrons of each cogwheel are considered wards of the octons, who guard their sectors quite rigidly and see that regulations are obeyed, routine is observed, and reports are invariably correct. Now, Lewin, these are the things that you hate.
Yeah.
These are the...
Oh, I don't understand.
So, it has, like, the circular collar at its, like, shoulder with, like, it moves air and water through it to help it float.
God, they look wild.
Yeah.
I kind of hate them less than...
It also has 8 tentacled arms attached to the collar.
The rest of them, but still...
Each octon has a personal staff consisting of 1 decaton, 1 nonaton, 5 pentadrones, 16 quadrones, 81 tridrones, 256 duodrones, and 1,728 monodrones.
Holy shit.
They maintain small towers, which are smaller versions of the towers of the quadrones, the secundi, and the primus, although they don't understand who built these structures and why.
Oh my gosh.
They don't understand anything. They have no passion.
Mr. Structure.
See, I think it's funny that for the base monodrones, or not monodrones, excuse me, mondrons, as the numbers increased, mm-hmm. they got better and more advanced. And now it seems like it hit the largest portion in the middle. And now as the numbers are decreasing,
yeah.
they're getting better.
Yeah.
And eventually we're going to probably... Here's a prediction. We're going to end up at the top with Primus, because prime means one. Boom.
Good job.
Hashtag rest of this episode spoilers.
So there are 49 septons. Septons are officials who maintain order and see that all regulations have been obeyed. Basically, these are all multiple levels of police.
49
that they all just like...
12? I don't like that.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Well...
it should be.
7 of them serve each hexton assigned to the quintons, and then everything else is divvied up to... Yeah.
It's modrons all the way down.
Yeah.
It just kind of keeps going. Too many numbers, but...
They appear as humanoids with large bald heads, and they have shoulder collars similar to those of octons, although they are smaller and are mostly used for underwater stuff.
Underwater stuff?
Yeah. They have 7 senses, which operate continuously. Hearing, sight, smell, taste, touch, ESP, and detect magic. Yeah.
ESP.
Detect magic is my personal favorite.
So, then you have the Hextons, which number exactly 36. They fulfill multiple roles in Modron society. Each is a general in charge of one of the 36 armies of Modron. And then 6 of those, like, all of them are generals, but 6 of those generals are attached to each of the wheels of the realm where they maintain the chain of command in Modron life. Another 6 serve at the Tower of Primus, although they are not really aware of his existence.
Because he's several steps above them.
Exactly.
So it's not like they communicate with him.
Hextons appear as humanoids with 6 arms, 2 large human arms with 6 fingers, and cool. 4 tentacles... tipped with sharp claws below.
Nice.
Yeah, they look...
horrifying?
Like Machamp and like body.
Mm-hmm.
Like just like the like muscular part. And then everything else is just like they clipped from 20 million different creatures. And I was just like, yep, we're going to glue them here.
Yeah. They also have fan-like wings that are folded and joined at the shoulders. Its personal guard consists of 1 septon, 2 octons, 3 nonatons, 5 decatons, 25 pentadrones, all fanatic in their dedication to their orders.
Jesus.
So, Quintons have 25 among them. Quintons are the major chief, the major bureau chiefs and record keepers of Mechadus. Finally, something other than a police officer.
Yeah.
Each has a sextant assistant, 7 septons, and 1 octon on its staff. There are bureaus in each of the sectors and quarter towers. 5 main bureaus in Primus's tower at the capital, and each of these bureaus is headed by a Quinton. They look like tall, stocky humanoids with 4 flexible arm joints jutting out from the shoulders. They also have prehensile tails.
Sick.
And fan-like wings similar to the Hextons. As a symbol of rank, which is kind of strange to me because they don't typically, like, rank is important to them, but they don't typically have, like, the ego for these symbols.
Yeah.
But as a symbol of rank, Quintons have a diamond inscribed in their foreheads.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess they have to have some way of showing it.
Also, I don't want to actually go back and really look at these, but I feel like these numbers aren't lining up. I mean, that's nothing against you. I'm just saying, yeah. I feel like that...
I tried to do as much as possible, but by the time I got here, I was like, I'm just going to have to trust that this is correct.
Because that sounds like... there needs to be way more of some of the lower hierarchical than there actually are.
Quartans are 16 in number. Quartans administer the 16 sectors of the Modern Realm and oversee the operation of the Bureau, sector governors, and army units attached to their regions. Each Quartan has a personal staff of those hierarchs assigned to his command, plus 36 pentadrones that act as a guard unit. These pentadrones can only be told to guard the object resembling the Quartan without ever understanding its role or purpose in their lives.
Oh my god.
So they're not even aware of what this thing is. They're just like, we have to guard this object.
Yeah, and it's moving and it's making weird noises, but we gotta keep doing it. They are 12-foot tall humanoids with 4 jointed arms and fan-like wings, and the face just keeps getting creepier and more mask-like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm kind of into that, though.
And,
we are almost done, I promise. So, Tertians have 9 among them.
Tertian?
Yes.
Like tertiary?
Yeah. They are committed to trial, judgment, and sentencing of all creatures in the Modern Realm. So, they are the judges. They supervise the Quartans and hear all crimes brought against the rigid orthodoxy of the realm. For the bulk of Modern population, the Tertians are alien and unfamiliar, but if presented with a case against a Duodrone, the base Modron can only imagine that the Tertian, if they can imagine at all, that the Tertian to be some incomprehensible manifestation of supreme logic.
What the hell?
Can you imagine?
Oh my god, it must suck to be a lower tier Modron.
Yeah, for so many reasons.
Oh no.
So, as with all other Modrons, they just pass on the orders coming from the top.
Mm-hmm.
Tertians look fairly human except for their 12-foot height, the horns jutting from the sides of their bald head, and their long prehensile tails that extend in a mace-like ball.
Yep, I was gonna say, their tail has a ball, like a crushing...
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and it can paralyze people.
Oh.
So, there are 4 secundi. Secundus is the singular for that. And they are viceroys of the quarters of... the 4 quarters of Modron space. And they are the virtual rulers of Mechanus, reporting only to the Primus.
Cool.
So, I mean, Primus is technically the ruler, but, like, they're the ones who really enforce everything.
Yeah. They're the ones who are actually doing stuff.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Each secundus has a staff of 2 tertians, and they command down the hierarchy, which that's 8. Where does the other one go?
Right? That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not criticizing anyone, because math is hard, but that doesn't line up. That doesn't add up.
I mean, there's probably something I'm missing. I'm sure I probably described something somewhere.
Okay.
But
something doesn't add up.
They appear as incredibly thin and tall humanoids with long, narrow faces and deep-set eyes. I don't know why, but I picture from Courage the Cowardly Dog, the guy that comes after Courage. No, okay.
I didn't watch it.
I watched one episode of Courage the Cowardly Dog, and it scared me so much I never watched it
again. If you guys know what I'm talking about, tweet at us, please. The Second Eye all live together in the Great Towered City near the center of their quarters, and they live in harmony with one another except during those extremely rare times when a new Primus must be chosen.
Ooh, then they're in competition with each other.
So, let me make sure that you guys have been paying attention. How many Primuses are there?
Two.
One.
Aww.
No, one. I'm kidding. There's one.
It's the ruler of all the Modron realm. It and it alone understands the whole structure.
I don't know how, but okay.
It decrees, orders, writes the laws, establishes the rules and regulation. All other Modrons exist to carry out the plans and obey the rules of the Primus. And the Primus exists to take care of and give orders to the Modrons. It's just a big cycle of maintaining itself. I love it.
Like a wheel in a clock.
Yes. Clockwork.
Perpetual motion machine.
Failure to meet this powerful creature standards will result in a Modron being declared rogue and sentenced accordingly.
Probably death, I would assume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or
not that death matters to things that can't feel, so.
Yeah. So.
Or does it?
Primus is a huge being who rises from an energy pool in the central part of its great tower at the center of the plane. Although Primus may also appear as a normal androgynous human, but let's talk about the giant form.
Yeah, that's not as exciting.
The form Primus's hands are unseen. For the right one is swathed in bright rainbow hues, and the left is covered in inky dark clouds. All in perfect balance.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of dope, actually.
Yeah. So Primus has the status of a greater power, like a lower deity does. Mm-hmm. Except it is possible for Primus to die, albeit under near impossible conditions.
I mean, gods die all the time. It's fine.
Its sole concern is for the Modron, so it doesn't send avatars to other planes or even take part in normal bickering at all.
Hey, at least it minds its own business.
It exists solely for the Modrons.
All Modrons with the spells, with like cleric-like spells, gain their power directly from Primus. So it's not like they have to pray to a god like regular An cleric spells.
God. Their god is actually just Primus.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oof. There's too much there. We can't.
The death of Primus does not break the link in Modron society because it's filled by the promotion of a second eye. However, this process creates a lot of turmoil since without a Primus, chaos is allowed to enter the equation.
Oh.
Some scholars have mistakenly interpreted this chaos as civil war, but the first act of the new Primus is to restore order to its race, and I actually want to describe one of the scenarios in which a new Primus was chosen. Mm-hmm. So Orcus, the demon lord of the undead.
That bitch.
Killed Primus and accidentally triggered a Great Modron March, which is basically what happens when all of the Modrons go crazy and go around to the far reaches of the realm, checking to maintain order.
Where they're not normally supposed to be.
Pretty much, yeah. It's a big thing.
Mess.
It typically happens every, 286 years, I believe. I actually didn't write that down. Don't quote me on that.
You know what? That number sounds specific enough. That's probably right.
I mean, yeah.
And probably true.
Oh, sorry. 289 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Just flip
the message over. Because the march occurs in every 17th grand cycle of Mechanus.
There's a lot of
There's so many numbers.
There's a lot of very important numbers here.
This
I'm kind of
is...
into it.
I wonder, is 289 a prime number?
It might be.
Because this might specifically be prime numbers because 17 is a prime number.
And 49 is a prime... No, 49 is not a prime number. Excuse me. Don't quote. Don't. That's wrong. Sorry. Don't tweet me.
I think it is a prime number.
It is. Oh, no, it's not.
It's not?
It's a multiple of 17. Okay, that makes sense. Because every 17 cycles.
It's 7. Okay.
Which took 17.
It's 17. It's...
17. Year, and each cycle takes 17 years. So every 289 years.
Oh, dope. I love numbers, actually.
Yeah, this should be your favorite episode, Lewin.
Unfortunately, you added lawful neutral to the concoction, so that made me like it less.
Sorry.
It's fine.
Numbers are not my friend.
So, yeah, they follow this pattern of checking, crossing portals and checking gates and everything. Just, it's unclear what its purpose was, but it's almost like a periodic reconnaissance mission. And I guess when Orcus, like, killed the Primus, it triggered it because it's like, oh shit, we better make sure that
everything's
okay, because like they're in panic mode basically because Primus is dead, and it went 200 years ahead of schedule.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So after Orcus killed Primus, he was like, whatever, and he left the energy pool where Primus is to go search for his wand, and the second eye came forward to try and claim it. They argued so much and rebelled against each other, and they actually decided to do this this challenge to each other to see who could kill the most chaotic creatures.
Oh, dang.
And that would be the one who became the new Primus. But
uh-oh.
I'm sorry, this is actually kind of interesting to me. One of the second eye was actually tainted by Orcus's evil influence in the energy pool.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to Archeron and murdered a group of petitioners there.
Oh, shit.
And the rest of the second eye were like, that's not okay. They weren't doing anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, we talked about killing chaotic creatures, but we meant chaotic creatures who were instilling chaos.
Yeah.
Not a group of petitioners. So they exiled him.
Boom.
And he fled with almost a million Modrons.
Oh, Jesus.
Which is actually what opened the door for the Formian invasion.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. But then the second is elevated to the new Primus, and there were two second eye that needed to be replaced.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like after that, all of the secundi were just like, okay, somebody just needs to just do this so that way that doesn't happen again.
Pretty much.
Jerry, do you want to?
Jerry, the second eye.
Jerry, please. We need something. Just go.
Jerry, the secondus.
Yes.
He's now Jerry the Primus.
Jerry from Primus 2020.
Jerry, the one and prime. But that is all I have. I realize it's a lot, but that's all I have for you guys. It was a lot, and I know it was a ton of numbers, but I thought, at the very least, the Modrons are cute.
Yeah, the Modrons are very cute.
Some of them.
Yeah, fair.
Well, some of them. Some of them are
deeply horrifying.
Some of the ones, especially in the middle, are deeply horrifying. Because they exist in such an uncanny valley, when they're in the middle, like, there's just enough elements of, like, a mechanical, a natural creature, and just enough elements of, like, an actual humanoid for it to freak me out. But then, like, as you get closer to the Primus, they look more humanoid. And then as you get further down, they look more mechanical. So it's like, okay.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
So much.
So many.
That being said, Willem, I hope that this
satisfied you.
This was a lot of information.
It was, but it was. I blame that on the way that Modrons and Mechanists are run. There's so much information.
They have a lot of information to them. A lot of like hierarchies and numbers, and
which is like dope. But also,
if you would like to send in a episode request like Willem did, you can do so at any of our social media, but also at dungeonpedia.podcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, and if you have any friends or anybody that you think would be interested in this, because, like, especially for people who like a lot of, I feel like, denser data, this would probably be really interesting, but tell them about our podcast.
Yeah.
And hopefully they will enjoy it.
I'm sure that they will.
I mean, I enjoyed it. I'm just also, like, still trying to... I'm that gif of that lady trying to, like,
parse it all.
Trying to parse it all. I'm the gif of that blonde lady. I'm just like, and there's like numbers.
Just numbers everywhere.
There were so many numbers, you guys. You don't understand how much I had to look for all of this.
It's okay.
I'm broken.
Well, Taylor needs to go lie down.
I need soup.
I think with that, we're going to end it off here. So.
Yes. Thank you all so much for listening and sticking through the hierarchy and the numbers of Mechanus and Modrons. And we'll catch you here next week with hopefully a little less numbers so we can all follow along on Dungeonpedia.
Why 12? Why were there so many 12s?
12 is a really good number, in my opinion.
Okay, but then where did 17 come from?
17 is also a good number. Cause it's
are all numbers good to you, Lewin?
Yes. You want to know what the best ones are? 69 and 420.